Welcome to the Crystal Pain Show, where we help you embrace your life right where you are and give you practical steps to get where you want to go. Whether you are in your car, folding laundry, cooking, cleaning, or maybe even just enjoying a cup of coffee and a few minutes of quiet, we're so glad you're joining us today. Here's your host, wife, mom of six kids, foster mom, entrepreneur, and author, Crystal Pain.
Welcome to another episode of the Crystal Pain Show. I am thrilled to have in studio today someone whose book has just deeply resonated with my life and whose story I think you are going to be so blessed and touched and maybe challenged and convicted by hearing. Davy Blackburn is the author of the new book, Nothing is Wasted, a true story of hope, forgiveness, and finding purpose in pain. And if you've not heard of Davy, you probably have, but you have it. If you haven't, I'd love, Davy, could you just start by giving us a little introduction of yourself?
Yeah, Crystal, thanks so much for having me. This is an honor to be with you guys. My name is Davy Blackburn. I live in Indianapolis, Indiana with my wife and our three kids and our long-haired miniature dachshund. And so our three kids are Natalia, Weston, Cohen, and we lead a ministry called Nothing is Wasted Ministries. We help people in trauma, tragedy, major life transition, and help them to discover purpose out of their pain. You know, pain is the common denominator of life for all of us. It's really what levels the playing field. It is part of our human experience, unfortunately. And we got into this, you know, you don't choose to get into ministry helping people in pain because it's not very quote unquote fun, but it's become a holy discontent for us, a really deep burden because of what I went through in 2015. And that's what I chronicle in the book is I lost my wife of 7 years, Amanda, and our unborn baby when our home was broken into in Indianapolis. We were pastors and church planters. We had moved from South Carolina to plant a church in Indianapolis. And 4 years into that, I left to go to the gym on a Tuesday morning, November 10th, 2015. And while I was at the gym, there were three men who had gone on a random crime spree in our city. And they had broken up into the home three doors down from us, saw me leave for the gym, and decided to break into my home. And Amanda was caught up in that. And Weston was 15 months old. He was in his crib the entire time, untouched and unharmed. But from what we can understand through now all of the legal proceedings and the testimonies, we think that Amanda was trying to protect Weston. Mm. And, you know, she was a fighter. She was someone that was so incredibly faithful and steadfast, and there was not going to be anything that that was going to threaten the people that she loved. And she was shot three times. Mm. And I came home from the gym and found her. And so it turned my world upside down. You know, when I found her, she was breathing still. She was unconscious, but it was very laborious. We got her to the hospital, and I just thought, I didn't have any context for what had happened. You know, when I walked into that, it was so traumatic that I couldn't tell that necessarily our home had been broken into, except for things just didn't make sense. There was so much stuff out of place. So I thought she had miscarried the baby. Something horrific had happened where she got dizzy, and when we got her to the hospital, doctors and investigators told me what they had seen, the three bullet wounds. And I just knew that God was going to perform a miracle because I had no context for that in my own life. You know, I think we go through life often thinking everything's going to be fine. That tragedy happens to people out there, what we watch in the news, but it's never going to happen, especially to that extent in our life. And that completely disoriented me. Upended my life. She was pronounced officially deceased November 11th, 2015, mm-hmm. which happened to be 4 years to the day that we packed a moving van up to move to Indianapolis mm-hmm. to plant a church. So there were so many questions swirling in my mind. How do I recover from this kind of sadness, loss, and despair? How do I recover from this rage and this anger that I'm experiencing against the perpetrators? How do I help Weston as a single dad? How do I help our congregation who is grieving this, the church that we were pastoring? And so it just completely, and my expectation of who I thought God was and what he was supposed to do for me had gotten completely upended too. So the next couple of years was quite a journey of trying to find healing and wholeness in that.
One of the things I really appreciate in your book is that you don't sugarcoat the feelings that you felt, because I think it's hard to admit, like you talk about that rage that you felt and that's real.
Right.
And I think that so often we want to almost like pretend, well, we're supposed to forgive, but I would love for you to share a little bit of, there's this beautiful story woven in of forgiveness through the book, but there had to be, especially in the early months and years, just that feeling of what if, you know, I could have, you know, you talk about how, what if I hadn't left for the gym? What if I had left later? What if I had gotten back earlier? All of that. And so you personally having to grapple with that, I think there are a lot of people who they can't forgive others because they just can't even forgive themselves.
That's right. Yeah.
So tell us, how have you walked through that and gotten to the other side of not living in feeling just this constant guilt?
Yeah. Well, you pinpointed it. You know, forgiveness is multifaceted. I believe there are times where we have to wrestle with forgiving others because there are very real, egregious things that are done to us. We take on offense throughout this life. I believe that there are times we have to forgive ourselves. And what you know, I'm a follower of Jesus. And so my faith really informs me that forgiving myself, actually what that means is stepping into the forgiveness that Jesus has offered me. And so that was part of my forgiveness journey. You know, I was a pastor who was preaching about forgiveness often, truthfully, because I was serving the people that were experiencing some very real offenses in their life. And this moment right here confronted me head on with, do I really believe what I say that I'm believing? I'm preaching these things, but now I have to wrestle with this personally. And I knew the right thing to say and the right thing to do, but my heart wasn't lining up with it. And there are going to be so many times in life where that's the case, where our heart doesn't line up with what we know we should do or what we, and the real question is, okay, what do we do in those moments? And how do we start taking steps? And that's really what I think faith is. Faith is believing so strongly in the things that you can't see or that you can't feel, that you're willing to take steps in that direction, even when you don't see it or feel it. And so early on, I knew I had to make a decision to forgive, that forgiveness was not going to be a feeling. I wasn't going to feel it. But it was really informed quite a bit by the way that, and I share about this in the book, the way that I heard the gospel when I was 8 years old, the message of Jesus was the pastor at this Easter play in Birmingham, Alabama, where I grew up. He shared that Jesus was murdered for my sin and for your sin, that he was put on the cross to take the penalty or punishment of sin from my life. And I didn't realize that at 8 years old, I'm like, I didn't realize that it was that you died for me, Jesus, that it was personal, you know? And when I heard that, and then I saw Jesus being portrayed on the cross, almost like a real life Passion of the Christ, you know, this in this sanctuary, Jesus lets out this cry from the cross. He says, Father, forgive them for they don't know what they're doing. And it changed my life. I realized in that moment, man, I am born into sin. I mean, how much wrong could I have done when I was 8 years old, right? But I realized that like my heart was selfish. My heart wanted to do my things in my way and my agenda. And that was going to lead to hurting people if I continued down that route. I needed a heart change. And so I invited Jesus into my life and I accepted the forgiveness that he offered to me through the work on the cross. And then when I'm 30 years old, so years later, now my wife is murdered. And I have to be confronted with this idea of, am I willing then to forgive in the same way that I've been forgiven? Yeah, I haven't murdered somebody, but my heart condition is and was the same as what these men were. You know, I've been angry with people. I've done wrong. I've sinned. And so that was a huge wrestling for me. And then what I realized is I began to wrestle through that when it came to forgiving other people is that I had to adopt the forgiveness of Jesus for myself to get rid of some of these feelings of guilt. Why did I not lock the door that morning? Why did I not change the locks a couple weeks before when we were doing house projects? Why did I not leave earlier? Why did I not leave later? What? All of these what ifs. And what I began to have to wrestle with was, okay, either life is this random string of events that happen to us, which is, that's a very unnerving thought, you know, that we have no agency, that we're just kind of floundering around in life, or we are completely in control of our life, which is also unnerving because I know my propensities that if I'm completely in control, I know that I mess up all the time, or there's some kind of tension there where we are invited into a faith response from God, that he is sovereign, that he is in control of all things, and yet he invites us to participate with him. And while he may allow certain things to happen in our lives, for what reason, we have no idea, he always has a plan to redeem those things. And so there was a whole lot of like wrestlings, these huge existential questions that we wrestle with that years later I've been able to kind of come to the bottom lines with. And they almost sound like really pithy theological phrases, right? But like the fact that God is like a judo artist, right? He takes what the enemy in our life, the real enemy, not the man that killed my wife, but the mastermind behind all evil. I think whether you're in faith perspective or not, you have this realization there is evil in this world and there's got to be some kind of mastermind behind it. Well, that's not God. That's Satan. And God takes what the real enemy meant for evil and he turns it around for good. And he's got a plan to walk with us in our valley, to restore us through our valley. And his heart is hurting for us probably more than our heart is hurting, because his intention for creation was that it would be in perfection. And sin has fractured all of it. And that's why we have suffering. That's why we have pain. That's why we have evil. And so God's plan for that is that he sent his son Jesus to die on the cross for us, to enter into the human experience, experience all the suffering that we've experienced, so that he could help us with a pathway through the valley of the shadow of death. So that was that's a whole lot that I just said right there, but that was really a lot of the wrestling that I had to come through that pulled me up out of seeing things in the real carnal, natural space where I wanted to get vengeance. And I had to realize, man, I've got to approach this from a different perspective, because otherwise it's going to kill me. Like I'm literally going to be destroyed and probably destroy everybody I love around me if I don't let go of this bitterness.
One of the things I love in the book is you talk about really getting to this place of compassion for those three men, like, and understanding that they have walked through some really, really horrific things in their life. And I just thought that that was beautiful as someone who has fostered and been part of the foster care system and just seen just the wreckage of brokenness that is in the world and how the trauma affects someone. And it's just given me new eyes to see people. And I just loved how you shared that in the book. And I don't think a lot of people have that perspective. And I think it really helps us as we go through life to have more compassion for other people when just, you know, you're driving on the road and someone swerves in front of you or honks at you or whatever, you know, just to think of like, I don't know what they're going through today. I don't know what they've been through. But was that something that you really had to work towards, or did it come to you easily?
Well, I had to work toward it for sure. You know, I think that all of us have a propensity to remove ourselves from people or situations who are unlike us or uncomfortable to us. And what that can cause us to do is begin to form biases or prejudices or judgmentalism toward people who are not like us. And then especially if someone hurts you or offends you, right? Like these three men. But, you know, and one of the things that I really want people to understand about this book, as they read it, they're going to see very clearly, this was not me like coming to these like really heroic, you know, aha moments where I'm going, ooh, I'm such a great person. It was God leading me on a path where there were different people who spoke into my life in the right moment, who helped me understand things that I wasn't quite seeing, but started to bring meaning and make sense to what was going on in my life. And so I remember having a conversation, I chronicle it in the book, where a pastor that we had gotten connected to, he knew the story of the young man that killed Amanda. And it was such a disorienting thing to know that now I was two arms length away relationally from the guy who killed Amanda. And then as I began to learn more about the other guy's stories, the fact that I substitute taught when we first moved to Indianapolis to plant the church in the school that two of them went to. And so you're like, man, I'm actually a lot closer. This isn't some like far off kind of, I'm actually a lot closer to these men than what I originally thought that I was. And as I learned their story, I began to understand, man, these boys at the time, they had experienced a whole lot of trauma. You know, Larry Taylor specifically, his mom was strung out on drugs. His dad was in prison. It was kind of the same story that you hear often. His mom drops him off when he's 12 years old at his basically aunt's house, who was a pastor's family. And they tried to help him, but they just couldn't. And, you know, you begin to learn a lot about trauma when you go through it. And what it does is it causes you to realize some of the things that I experienced and felt in my trauma I could very easily see how somebody could resort to that kind of behavior, that kind of survivalism, right? Where all of a sudden your prefrontal cortex is offline and you have flipped over into lizard brain and you're like in complete fight or flight survival mode. Well, people, kids, especially who are in the foster system or who are on the streets like these boys were, they're in that all the time. And so one of the conversations I had with another pastor was he knew some boys, actually, you'll read about the book, but it was Amanda's old youth pastor and the getaway car was found on his street. And he goes, Davey, it's the boys that live across the street from me. On a good day, I'm interacting with them. They seem like really normal boys, but I know on a bad day, they would harm anybody that was standing in the way of their survival. Mm-hmm. And so you start to learn some of that stuff. And this systemic poverty within urban contexts, especially, and how I've been given so many more opportunities. And I've just in life born of a, particular socioeconomic status and with different, different opportunities that have been availed to me that other people haven't. And you start to see more with compassion and recognizing the plight of other people. And it begins to really erode a lot of that judgmentalism and that prejudice. And so that was the journey for me as I began to hear about their story. I think that's important for all of us. As you begin to learn other people's stories, you can begin to gain empathy for others. And compassion, meeting people with compassion, actually helps to untangle and undo the trauma that they've experienced, ironically. And so the Lord really taught me through this journey that as I'm helping other people in trauma now, to seek to understand and seek to empathize, as opposed to seek to teach and kind of give like, this is what you should do, because it helps them to begin to downregulate, feel safe, and begin to move forward in wholeness.
So I've never really been somebody who is interested in birds until I had kids. Right now, my 4-year-old and 2-year-old are really into birds. We go on a walk every day and they're always looking for that bird and that bird. Oh, mom, look, there's a red bird and there's a blue bird. And I'm telling them about the birds and we're listening to their different songs and learning the different bird calls. And it's just been so much fun. Well, a way that we are taking it to the next level is with the Feather Snap Scout Smart Bird Feeder. This is such a cool gadget. It offers a brand new way to connect with nature and learn more about birds right in your own backyard. It's got a high resolution camera that connects to an app so you can check out a live stream from your feeder, take photos and videos of birds that visit. And this is the best part for me as someone who still has a lot to learn about birds. You can ID the species using expert trained AI. You can even earn badges along the way, and you can learn fun facts about hundreds of different species of birds. For example, did you know that American crows can recognize and remember people's faces and even teach their young who's a friend and who's a foe? I thought that was pretty cool. The Feather Snap Feeder is entertaining, it's educational, and it's just plain fun for the whole family. Check them out today at feathersnapcam.com. That's feathersnapcam.com. We hear often about probiotics and gut health and the importance of prioritizing probiotics and gut health. And sometimes it can feel overwhelming to know, where do we start? What do we do? What brand should we trust? Well, an easy place to start is with Seeds DS01 Daily Symbiotic and PDS08 Pediatric Daily Symbiotic. They are clinically studied probiotic and prebiotic formulations that are easy to add to your family's daily routine, and they help support whole body health for parents and kids. One of the things I love about seed probiotics, the DS01 and the PDS08, is that they don't need refrigeration. So it's so convenient, you can take it on the go. I also recommend that you, if you're wanting to start this habit, stack it onto another habit. So what is something that you do every morning? Every morning, do you eat breakfast? Well, as soon as you eat breakfast, let that be your reminder to also take your probiotic. You can even set it out at night because, like I said, it doesn't need to be refrigerated. So set it out at night right by where you're going to prep your breakfast in the morning as a reminder to take it. The DS01 Daily Symbiotic, which is for 18 and over, this is for adults, the one that I've been taking, is backed by rigorous scientific validation. It's formulated with 24 scientifically and clinically studied strains for benefits across gut, skin, and heart health, and it's extensively tested for potency, purity, and contaminants. Invest in your whole family's health with Seed. Go to seed.com/crystal and use code 25crystal to get 25% off your first month of DS01 Daily Symbiotic or PDS08 Pediatric Daily Symbiotic. That's 25% off your first month of Seed's DS01 or PDS08 at seed.com/crystal, code 25crystal.
You actually got to express your forgiveness.
Right.
Like, and tell us about that. I just felt like that was a really powerful part of the book. It wasn't just like mentally and, you know, saying to God, like, I forgive them, but you actually got to tell them personally. How was that for you? Tell us about that.
Well, it was difficult. Mm-hmm. You know, Larry Taylor specifically, as I write about in the book, that was the first time I had been in a room with him was during the trial. Mm-hmm. And I had to go give my testimony. The other two, I had gone to sentencing, well, a couple of hearings, one a sentencing hearing, one just like a preliminary hearing. And I had been able to be in a room with them. So I feel like that God in his providence gave me a little bit of preparation by going to the accomplices' other hearings and being able to kind of immerse myself in that and get prepared for that. But each one of them, I wrote, you know, part of the sentencing for each one of them is victims are allowed to write a statement. And there were other victims in this crime spree. And, you know, there's statements, and I don't blame them, you know, but they were very, in a lot of ways, dripping with bitterness and very venomous. And again, I don't blame them because of what these men stole from them, you know, both in safety and security and mental health and all kinds of things. But I just felt like that what I needed to communicate to each one of them in a separate way was that I wanted to communicate to them who Amanda was. And that if they really knew who she was, if there was any hope that their heart could be softened, if they learned who she was and what an incredible woman she was, then they would begin to feel remorse. And then my hope was that as I shared with them that I don't hold this against them because Jesus has forgiven me for my sin, and he can also not only forgive them, but also restore them. And he can help them in this moment right here, a critical juncture in their life. He can rewrite their story too. That he wants to invite them into a different story, that they are not too far gone. It's part of the message of Nothing is Wasted. Amanda believed that nobody was beyond repair, that she believed anybody could be restored. She did that in ministry as a pastor's wife, as she was ministering to people and helping people who were broken and hurting. She did that practically in restoring furniture and going to antique shows and selling those. And so that heart right there, I wanted to bring into, because I felt like God had infused me with that heart as he was walking me this journey. And so each time I shared these statements, there were a couple of them. One of them, Jalen, and I don't write about this one in the book, but when I shared with him, hey, Jalen, I have chosen to forgive you. It was a really interesting moment, Crystal, because that moment haunted me as I was thinking about it. As it was leading up to it, I was so almost like paralyzed. I could hardly read my statement because I was so, I mean, it was just such a big moment to face one of the killers of your wife. And as soon as I began to read the statement to him, and when I said, Jalen, I've chosen to forgive you, something snapped in the room. I mean, everybody sensed it and felt it. It was like this, I would say, in the spiritual, where the enemy was wanting to gain a stronghold on my heart to really get me paralyzed and stuck, that got released because I actually stepped in faith into that statement to say, I've chosen to forgive you. And then what happened with him is he took his orange jumpsuit, pulled it up over his head and began to weep. And I'll never forget that moment. Another one, and I write about this one in the book, Deano looked at me in the eye when he had the opportunity to talk to the judge, when he had the opportunity to talk to his family, when he had the opportunity, he looked at me and he said, I can't believe that you have chosen to forgive me. He said, I know I could have stopped this. Now, mind you, this was after he couldn't regain his composure for about 2 minutes because he was weeping. He said, I know I could have put a stop to this and I didn't. And if I were you, I would hate me. And I cannot believe that you've chosen to forgive me for this. And so I saw a heart softening in both of them that gave me a little bit of hope, hope that there could be some change in them. Afterwards, Deanna's grandmother, you know, Christy and I stayed around and we ended up having conversations with some of his family. And his grandmother came up to us and said, prior to all of this, I had lost hope in humanity. Mm-hmm. I had lost hope in God. And the way I've seen your family walk through this has restored that hope in me. Mm-hmm. And that really is what brings so much meaning and inspiration to all of this. You know, by faith, I'm going, all right, I believe that God's word is true, that if I do walk in forgiveness, it will restore hope in people, right? And maybe even the perpetrators, that maybe I can be a part of this like redemptive thing that God is trying to do in the world right now. I can play my little part in it. And that was just by faith, but then actually stepping into it and getting to experience that from his grandmother, that was when faith became sight to go, oh, wow, God, your word really is true. And thank you for letting me be a part of seeing it with my very own eyes. Mm. A lot of people walk in faith their whole life and they don't get to see the fruition of their faith until they actually see Jesus on the other side of eternity. And I'm grateful that I've been able to see in front of me the work that God is doing to restore not only my story, but other people's story around us.
One of the things I loved in the book is you share a lot of Amanda's journals, and it was just really powerful. And you share some of like your dating and engagement, and she just seemed like the most amazing woman. Yeah. And I thought of, you know, then you end up meeting Christy, and then you talk in the book, you know, I think some people, you know, you're just hearing you on a podcast and they're thinking, well, it seemed, you know, he's forgiven and now he has this wife and, you know, it's like God's restored everything. And yet you talk about, there were some big challenges in the church that you all had, you know, you and Amanda built, then it ended up, you had to walk away from that.
Yeah.
And that would be so hard in the midst of everything else you've walked through. How did you process, it's like one more huge loss? How was that for you?
Well, it wasn't, frankly, and I think this is just kind of understanding and learning more of my heart, maybe the human heart. At first, I was like, God, how could you let this happen? Right? I thought that I had gone through the worst of the worst, and that it's almost like before you step into, you know, tragedy or trauma, you almost think that, you know, you're impervious to pain. And then when it happens, you're like, okay, and the reality gets oriented and you're like, okay, well, I'm not impervious to pain. All of us, pain's going to touch all of us. So you work through that, but then you almost have this idea that like, well, I've just walked through all of that. Now for the rest of my life, I'm impervious to pain. And then you realize, no, life is full of suffering and pain. And I don't say that for us to be in despair because, you know, what my faith informs me of is Jesus said, hey, in this world, you will have trouble. And he says, I tell you this so that you can have peace, which doesn't make sense to me because I'm like, you just told me we're going to have trouble. I'm a little bit worried about that. How am I supposed to have peace? Well, it's what he said afterward. He said, but take heart, I've overcome the world. And the resurrection of Jesus, the fact that he got up from the grave, tells us that no matter what comes into our life, no matter what happens, we don't have to walk through it as a victim. We can be victorious and we can get back up through the power of the Holy Spirit and we can walk with purpose. And even when things don't make sense, we can have meaning in this life. So it was very difficult to have to close the church, this thing that Amanda and I had started. It felt like I was burying another baby, honestly. This was something that was, and you'll read about in the book, Amanda's heart for this church. But I had, it was very clear that God was shifting the assignment. Now on this side of things, I look at it and go, there's no way we could be pastoring the church and helping people in this ministry that runs adjacent to the church. You know, I'm speaking at a different church every Sunday for about 40 Sundays a year. And so it makes sense to me now, but it didn't make sense then. And that's usually what happens when it comes to pain. It's like God shifts things in your life. There's transition. People leave, you know, your life and you're going, what is going on, God? And usually what's happening is he's redirecting you into a new assignment. And so what I learned is you have to really lean into this. You have to grieve it. Every single loss, you have to learn how to grieve it. And if you don't, you're going to carry that sense of unresolved grief and trauma throughout your life. And unless you let God transform it, it's going to transfer onto other people. And it'll end up oozing out of you in really ways that are sideways and unhealthy. And so for us to be a healing agent, we have to grieve every single loss that's gone on in our life so that we can help other people heal as well. So, you know, and then you now, like, it feels like I have two very different lives that I'm living. This life that I had with Amanda, this life that I have with Christy, and it's both difficult. I mean, now we're blending a family and we're like, it's not like all of a sudden, oh, our story is restored and everything's peachy and easy. No, there's difficulty at every single turn in life. We're trying to figure out how to shepherd these little kids' hearts, and they've gone through trauma. And so how do we help them with all of that? And so every season of life is going to have that. But I think what's beautiful about it is in every season, God's word is true, that he is a good shepherd, that he will not leave us in the middle of the valley, and that he becomes very personal in the middle of the valley. We can lean into him. We can trust him. He knows the way through it. Jesus, scripture says, is an empathetic high priest, which means he came to earth and he experienced everything that we've experienced in this life. So if nobody else understands what you're going through, Jesus understands. And I can test you on this, because I remember going, how in the world, Jesus, do you understand what it's like to lose a wife? How do you understand that? And I remember in a moment, Jesus whispering to my heart, Davey, I fully understand what it's like to lose my bride. In scripture, the bride of Christ is the church. And because sin entered into the world, essentially his bride was taken captive by evil. And he had to come to earth to purchase his bride back by the work he did on the cross. And when that realization came to me, it was like, oh, you do understand everything any of us go through. So I can lean into you, even if I don't have somebody else in this world to understand. So that's really what I'm learning now. Every season, every step of life, it's going to be marred by hardship and trial and difficulty. But it also, as we lean into Jesus, it's going to be restored in beauty, because he makes all things beautiful in his time.
I love so much, you know, you alluded to it about blending your families, you know, that it, you know, God has, there's this beautiful story that he's writing, but it isn't that it's this perfect story.
It's not like it's complete at all. It's like, we're just, yeah.
And I really appreciated your honesty with that, because I think that sometimes people can get to a place where you think, okay, I've been through all of this, you know, now surely it's all going to be just good. But it's like, God is still working and we still need to cling to him and rely upon him. In this side of heaven, there's always going to be pain and hardship. And yet you're choosing to continue to look to him and to fight through. And I was really just encouraged by that part of the book, because I feel like it would be easy for people to just be like, oh, now it's all good, you know?
Yeah. Well, and it's really easy for people, I think, to try to communicate that. And that's just not real. That's just not real life, you know? Because maybe we want people to feel like, oh, take courage or be in hope. No, we take courage in spite of the difficulty that we're going through. And there are very real moments that I have, especially going through this whole writing process, Crystal, and then revisiting it over and over with releasing the book. There are times I look back on my life with Amanda. I'm like, man, life was so much simpler back then. And I miss that. You know, things are so beautiful and complicated all at the same time right now. And there's this weird paradox that I walk in every single day. And I think it's a paradox that all of us have to wrestle with. It's the paradox that says, you know, I would never have asked to go through what I've gone through. And at the same time, what I've learned and how it's strengthened me and built me into the person that I am today, a person who has a stronger character, a person who is closer, more intimate with God, I wouldn't replace that. And that's a very difficult thing to wrestle with. There's no, it's not like they're not mutually exclusive. Like I can't, it's not either or. And when you walk through pain and tragedy, you realize life is not an either or thing. It's often a both and thing. You know, Elizabeth Elliot, who was a missionary in South America, whose husband was murdered on the mission field. So talk about people who are going to, with this really great cause, right in the middle of God's will, and tragedy strikes. What she said is, she talked about the gain of loss is what she said. That's the paradox. The gain of loss. She said, what you gain in relationship with the giver far outweighs the loss of the gift. And it echoes something that scripture says, right? Where it says this light and momentary affliction that we're experiencing right now. Well, it doesn't feel light. It doesn't feel momentary. It says this light and momentary affliction is producing for us an eternal weight of glory that far outweighs the former. So what that means is as we press into God during these times, as we get closer to him, as we let him do what he wants to do in our lives during these times of hardship and pain, that there is a glory that's being produced in us that is way, way heavier than the light and momentary affliction we're feeling right now in comparison. So imagine how heavy you feel right now with what you're going through. Well, imagine how gloriously heavy what's coming, the reward that's coming to you. And so you've got to really reorient your perspective in life if you're going to walk through this kind of pain and this kind of trauma.
So beautiful. I just really appreciate your willingness to share. I mean, I think just writing a book like this and then knowing that in writing it, you're going to be revisiting this over and over and over, and just your courage to step out in faith and share your story. As we close, I would love for you to share a little bit about your ministry, because I know that there are people who are listening who are really deeply hurting. And I feel like that you have, you know, this book is fantastic and I would highly recommend people get it, but also you have more to offer. And I'd love for you to share a little bit about that.
Yeah. So our ministry, really, we have a whole lot of content on our online library of content, but really the basis of it is our podcast, the Nothing Is Wasted podcast. And we interview people who have gone through really difficult things and just they have testimony of how God has shown up in their life. And so you want to hear stories of hope, stories of encouragement, stories of like, wow, I can't believe they were able to get through what they got through. The Nothing Is Wasted podcast is a fantastic resource for you. It's going to fill you and encourage you with hope. But the other thing that we do as a ministry is we have a course called Pain to Purpose, Pain to Purpose. And what that does is that helps to walk you kind of practically through, no matter what your pain point is, whether it's loss, whether it's sexual betrayal, abuse, childhood trauma, no matter what it is, pain is a part of all of our human experience. But what this does is this helps us, even when the pain is senseless or what you've gone through is senseless, it helps you to find purpose and to repurpose that pain so that you can be whole and healed and you can help other people in that. So that's what this course does. It helps you heal. It helps you rebuild a strong foundation and then move forward in purpose. And then finally, what we do is we have coaches. We've got about four dozen coaches who are trauma informed. Many of them are trauma certified and they walk with people one-on-one. So if someone comes to our ministry and goes, for instance, they've just lost a child, they're like, I need someone to help me, you know, who has been there, you know, who's really experienced this, not just someone theoretical and like, well, this is what I would kind of say to your situation. That's what our coaches do. So each of our coaches have a different specialty area of pain point because that's what they've experienced. And they're just a little bit further along the journey and they can help you know, you know, as guides, like here's kind of the pitfalls that you might run into, or these are the things that I've experienced that you're going to want to be heads up for as you're navigating this valley. So that's what our ministry does. We walk beside churches, college campuses, correctional facilities as we launch Pain to Purpose and this entire ecosystem into the DNA of what these churches and college campuses and correctional facilities do.
So if someone would want to take the next step to connect with you all, where would you recommend that they go?
They can go find everything at nothingiswasted.com. Okay. So everywhere from the book to everything else we do as a ministry, the podcast, nothingiswasted.com. And the book you can pick up anywhere books are sold, you know, Amazon, Barnes & Noble.
Thank you so much, Davey. And again, the book is Nothing Is Wasted, a true story of hope, forgiveness, and finding purpose in pain. And then go check out nothingiswasted.com.
Thank you for joining us today. For more great resources, please visit crystalpain.com.